renegade economist is saying, yeah.
Economics for activists. Economics is being made. Economics. These are the tools activists need. How can we calculate? What motivates them? Why do people spend money? Understand the basics.
Week we speak to Alana Hartsock, yes, Alana Hartsock from the Earth Rights Institute, on whether housing rights or corporate rights. What is the future of modern democracy? Here on The Renegade Economist with Carl Fitzgerald. Yes, welcome to another big week in the world of economics here on The Renegades, where we concentrate on this peak monopoly of landlords, bankers, and those with license privileges, such as the right to charge people whatever they want for surgical operations when patenting such procedures. That is a common theme here on The Renegades, and my name's Carl Fitzgerald, here to talk about housing finance to start off with. And this week there were some big figures out. The total number of loans taken out has dropped 12%, but that is the least severe in the nation. Yes, housing loans in number dropped by 12% in February. That's slipping from a high of 15,300 in September to just 13,400 in February. And these numbers have dropped in 6 out of the last 8 months. Recently I've been starting to exercise a few doubts about whether this market is actually going to crash, whether people can afford $600,000 or $700,000 for a tiny unit apartment in some suburbs. Well, we spoke last year about Gavin Putland's report, Recessions Begin at Home, and in that he showed that the vast majority of the world's recessions weren't actually inflicted from a US cold, a GFC-inspired cold. It wasn't all to do with derivatives or credit default swaps, but what he showed was that when you have two successive quarters in a row where the turnover of property drops, that is an extremely strong indicator the market is cooling down, and from that, there's going to be that property crash. So this hasn't been a constant 6 months in a row or two quarters yet, so we will stand by and watch, but who knows, by the time spring comes around, when all of those speculative vacancies go on the market as investors rub their hands together and hope they can be funded to go on their next round the world skiing trip starting in Aspen, who knows whether all those properties hitting the market at once will add too much supply for the demand required. So sit on the edge of your seats for those of you who are still renting, wondering whether to get in the game. Do not buy. Please do not buy. A good friend of mine asked me this week and I got a bit excited to tell him, please, just wait. Do not get involved at the moment. The market is being propped up by mum and dad investors, by Chinese foreign investors, and it seems like the astute ones such as Solomon Liu have sold out at the peak of the market, and now it's just the suckers getting caught at the top, and they're going to pay through the nose for years and years to come. What a tragedy it will be for them. What a disaster for those families who do buy at the wrong time, who then have to pay all that extra interest on the huge lump sum they've borrowed, remembering that 70 to 80% of that lump sum is the land component itself. That 70 to 80% should be part of what's known as the commons, should be all our birthright. And I want you to listen today as we hear from Alana Hartsock on whether human rights or corporate rights really trump, and can we look after ourselves? That is the key question. But in China, things are ramping up. And as a indicator of just how out of kilter and how such poor knowledge there is when it comes to land policy, the Chinese government in the last week has announced a halt, an absolute halt on all land sales. So, yes, they've said, listen, this property bubble there is getting out of hand. We're going to have to crack into this. And what they've done is put a halt on all land sales. Any students of this show will understand that by reducing supply, you're going to do exactly the opposite of what those in the policy hot seat are trying to do, and that is to cool the land market. They actually want to change the tax system around, put a charge on land. As Sun Yat-sen, the founder of modern China, promoted vigorously back in the early 20th century, he was saying, listen, the aristocratic families in China, these huge dynasties, they've caused all these wars over all these years, battling for land. The only way we can maintain a stable society is if those who live in the best locations pay something extra back to the rest of the community as compensation for that. And that's what's needed. Over in South Africa, we've got another disastrous land-based policy issue going on. We've talked about Venezuela and their incredibly slow land reforms there. Brazil trying hard but not getting anywhere. Same thing in South Africa. The ANC come in with all this hoo-ha, all this hope for their people. But due to the ignorance of economic policy, they've shot themselves in the foot. They're relying on bureaucrats to walk in and tell white farmers to get off the land, get out of here, only to be faced with lots of legal documentation and years in court. This has slowed down the whole process, just like it does anywhere else in the world. And there's been an uprising from young people in South Africa, young Negroes getting fired up about the lack of opportunity that they're getting. And with so many people having lost confidence in the market, they're seeing that bureaucrats have the power, but so often those bureaucrats use the power for their own best interests, don't they? So let's hope that South Africa comes to their senses. I tried to get one of our colleagues on the show this week, but it just wasn't to happen. Sounds like absolute pandemonium out there on the streets, trying to get the message across that we don't need to go and burn and pillage private property. We can just use the tax system to force those underutilized farms to become economic. With that, we're not demanding that every piece of land on the planet gets farmed to its nth degree. We're talking about ensuring that those pieces of farm on the most fertile land in the best locations are actually used for their best use, not held out of supply to manipulate grain prices or maybe just for the land value itself.
The co-director of the Earth Rights Institute and author of the book The Earth Belongs to Everyone, Alana, great to have you back on the Renegade Economists.
Oh, I'm great to be with you.
Now, the GFC, the global financial crisis, it's been on edge for the last 18 months, coming up to 2 years. Australia here, we still haven't seen the bubble pop, but there's some very strong signals of who knows, our property bubble could be right on the edge of exploding. So tell us, what can middle-class Australia come to expect if we are to reflect on America? How are middle-class Americans dealing with this huge loss of economic sovereignty?
I don't think they're dealing well at all. I mean, the middle class is collapsing. I mean, people that are foreclosed on, what are their options? They go to some crappy cheap rental place? Well, there's no really cheap rentals anymore. What they were paying in mortgages then going to go into rent. They lose their home. They lose their equity. They lose now they're in debt for a house, some of them. Turn in their keys and walk away. That's one thing we have here that other countries don't have. You can just let go of the whole property, and you won't have a liability often on any of it. People are moving into families, you know, two families sharing a house. That's happening as a survival method. Other people, even advocated and promoted by Representative Marcy Kaptur, our Ohio State Representative to Congress, she is telling people to stay in their homes. If you're foreclosed on, she just says, don't move out, stay in your home. That message is getting out there, too, that some people like civil disobedience, but some might call it moral obedience, staying in their home.
And how are they feeling about these conditions, that the economic policies that caused this? Are people waking up, or are they just seeing this as business as usual? We can keep supporting Wall Street with this corporate welfare.
I think there's a whole lot of turmoil. I think that people don't know how to think for the most part. There are certainly progressive movements trying to get a handle on what the problem is. I don't see a whole lot of coherency in their agenda, except kind of a reversion to the old left paradigm, if you will. You know, big government solving the problem through taxes and transfer payments. So I'm not seeing a whole lot of good possibilities. I'm seeing some negative things with this whole Tea Party movement on the rise. Tea Party movement seems to be a lot of middle class, but lower middle class people who can't really think very clearly, and they're angry and they're upset. They're being led by people like Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck, who put out a lot of hate and even some tinges of racism coming up, which is really ugly. It just seems more like a way to vent anger, which I'm kind of concerned about, rather than an invitation to think clearly. That's the Tea Party movement emerging.
And this statement, Obama, rather than Obama, seems to be coming out quite a bit. There must be a fair amount of disillusionment amongst the progressive left who were interested in genuine reform. Whilst he's got his health policy through, there's plenty of big loopholes there for the big pharma to clean up on.
You know, Obama's getting it from the right and the left and the middle. It's difficult. You know, if you play chess, the king doesn't have much leeway to move after all, really. You know, one step back, one step forward. And that seems to be his – if he makes what looks like a positive step to some, it looks like a very negative step to another. And I think that we're just going to keep seeing congressional gridlock. And I don't think there's going to be enough unity on federal government level to really be able to address these major problems that we have. I think that the federal government may just keep falling apart, and people will begin to recognize that more and more. And there's more focus in writing coming up now on going local and building local-based economies, almost like a survival from what everyone senses is kind of possible implosion of the federal government, all this massive debt, the endless wars. Many of us just don't see our federal government's capacity no matter who's elected. There's so much big money in our elections that even if the guy looks like a good guy or gal who gets on the top there, usually they sold their soul in some way or another, or they're really frozen into positions that are unviable because of the big money backers.
And how maddening is it that most of that money is needed to pay for advertising that's broadcast on what was once known as the public airwaves?
And now the Supreme Court passed the law that says that corporations can give as much as they want to for political candidates. It's pretty much the death knell for American democracy in my book.
But on the fringes must be thousands and thousands of homeless people. How are they responding to these big picture issues?
You know, in just the past few weeks, it's really come to my attention that the homeless movements are really solidifying in this country and massively networking. And not only that, delightfully, they are connecting the homeless plight to the land issue. So we're hearing more and more land rights connected with the homeless issue. And I was looking at a website today that's really looking at this as a new civil rights movement. And they're talking about taking the stand on the land, taking back the land. There's movements called that. These properties that have been foreclosed on, going in and not sit-ins. That was 60s style. This is live-ins, not civil disobedience, but moral obedience. And a great interview I just saw on Democracy Now! With one of the leaders of this movement, Miami-based Max Renault. And Max is saying, you know, what's coming down to is a clash between two versions of rights. And one is the human right to housing, and the other is the corporate rights to profit. And we've seen massive monies, billions given away to the banks, and these increases of homelessness. We're going to have to decide where our values as our civilization, as our people in the United States, are we going to go with housing for the homeless, or are we going to keep shoveling money to corporations and corporate bailouts? It's really come down to a line. Draw the line. Which side are we going to be on?
Come up with that tightrope act to be able to juggle both public and private rights? How can you see a way forward for these homeless movements within this congressional gridlock that's surrounding the public interest?
I think here with the homeless movement, we can take a stand. I intend to be taking a stand with homeless people and getting engaged, first of all, with homeless and land rights movement in Washington, D.C., near where I live. And that is direct land access. The land rights is about take back the land. And I think to be in solidarity is to be with that struggle, the right to direct land access. Along with that, it's education about the whole public finance tax shift that we work with for the land value taxation, land value capture, to eliminate taxes on the good things, on work, jobs, on productive activities. And to collect this massive amount of unearned income that's now privatized that goes to the land and resource base and that we call land rent or resource rent. And you're there in Australia and in Melbourne, and you have fabulous work that's been done on calculating the amount of land rent for Australia. I use that work by Brian Kavanaugh all the time, those graphs that show that land rent is one-third of GDP. And that because that has been privatized and not captured for public benefit, you have taxation on top of that, that vast increase of land costs, hence housing costs. And it very clearly shows the root cause of the rich-poor gap in Australia, but that's transferable to most every place. I think that one-third of GDP being unearned income, as far as we know, that's pretty much across the board, at least in developed countries, as far as we know.
It's been frustrating to see that Obama has adopted a similar version to our first homeowners grant here. And in America, there's a first homeowners tax credit of $8,000. It's rumored to be increasing to $15,000. He's also extended from 3 months to 6 months a mortgage payment plan proposal where those under threat of foreclosure can pay reduced amounts for up to 6 months. There's all these issues with graffiti. America is in shock that there are busloads of Chinese investors circling Detroit, circling Michigan, and buying up prime locations. And they're just going to sit on those sites for 10 to 20 years until the next bubble comes along. And what do you think has to happen for the everyday person to build up their economic literacy? We all dream of growing wealthy, but few understand the game that determines who and by which means those lucky few become so very, very wealthy.
Carl, my dear, did you realize you just asked me four questions in one breath?
Probably.
The homeowners and giving the $8,000 for people to purchase a home, we know that's going to go into increased land value. It's just going to go right back to the increased cost of housing. If you give lower interest rates, if you make any kind of benefits to homeownership within the current structure, it increases housing costs. Same with lowering interest rates or same with delayed payments or making it easier to make payments. If it's easier for the people who need housing to borrow to get housing, It's going to make the land values higher, and that's going to increase housing costs. So it's absolutely a no-win situation. Now, China, well, you know, during the Japanese bubble, Japanese were buying up land in the United States. We buy up land in the United States. Rich people in the United States buy up land all over the world when they see low land values. Nothing new on that, is it? It's the same game. It's the land speculation game, and it's global, and it's a way for wealthy people to get wealthier, and it's a way for the global middle class everywhere to reap negative consequences in terms of our viability as middle class people. And, of course, the lower class, the poor people, increasingly crushed, increased hunger and starvation, both in the United States and worldwide, traced down to the fact that we don't have any democracies that give us our democratic birthright to the land and resources of this planet. And if this is not a huge civil rights issue and a huge democracy issue, then I don't know what is our democratic rights to our earth itself as a human right. So until we get that, until we really get it, until we form the populist movements, really get cohesive around the connection between taxation, public finance policy, and the human right to land and resources, I think it will just be deteriorating conditions around the world and increase suffering. The more rapidly these movements can grow, take charge, see this as earth rights democracy movements, the more rapidly we can start to turn these around. I guess it depends on what each of us does each day, Carl.
Alana, you have a unique tool to help this economic literacy lift. Please tell us about it.
This is an online course and training program. It's called Land Rights and Land Value Capture. It is on the web at course.earthrights.net. It was developed under contract with the UN Habitat Global Land Tool Network. It is now sponsored by my institute, Earth Rights Institute. It has over 400 people enrolled from 63 countries. It is a very dynamic and effective way for people to learn about this policy. So that's course.earthrights.net.
Have all those names pasted in the plat books.
Land sales out of escrow are always recorded within the week.
And these are all new owners.
That's right.
Well, that means that most of the valley's sold in the last few months.
That's what it says.
So what?
That shows a very intense interest in the economics of this country.
I just hate seeing anything go to waste.
That your birth gave you the right. That your birth gave you the right to power.
Pursuit leader to 245. Pursuit leader to 245. Ready your signal.
I can take care of myself. I proved that.
Your technology doesn't seem to be doing what it says on the brochure. Nobody at the bottom can get to the top.
In a prepared statement, he mentioned specifically the types of, quote, repressive, unquote, legislation. In a prepared statement, he mentioned specifically the types of, quote, repressive, unquote, legislation.
The British do not give independence or freedom to anybody on the planet.
In a prepared statement, he mentioned specifically the types of, quote, repressive legislation which led to his sudden resignation. These included the no-knock laws, stop-and-frisk laws, cancellation of immunity for Fifth Amendment cases, preventative detention, the activation of detention camps, and the establishment of quasi-judicial tribunals.
You still getting those nightmares you told me about?
Was a messenger.
Rosencrantz! Give that stuff!
Still getting those nightmares you told me about?
Pursuit leader to 245. Pursuit leader to 245. Ready your signal.
What do you call this shit here?
No questions, not a flicker of doubt.
Where the people are allowed to vote, but nothing else has changed.
The problem in the past!
The wider ideas of democracy, of redistributing land and wealth and creating equality, must not be tried.
The problem in the past has been the man turning us against one another.
An audience!
What the committee feared finally happened. ADEC objected to the food smells, loud sitar, and multi-language training after hours. The researchers located a well-hidden logbook listing a series of radical B-deck noise control procedures.
Because we have been fighting for 10 square feet of ground.
Is that what you imagine?
This is it.
Reports are coming in of explosion in downtown Johannesburg.
Listen to you, you sound like the damn commercial.
The life expectancy throughout the Soviet Union has fallen by about 20 years. The birth rate has plunged. The death rate has soared. The disease rate has soared. This is what the neoliberals called financial equilibrium.
The major fortunes in America have been made in land.
Don't wait to buy land. Buy land and wait, Will Rogers.
Land is the basis of all wealth, by Adam Smith.
The breakdown of world finance is that essentially the crooks took over and were promoted on the guise that crime is the free market. Crime is the American way. Crime is what the Washington consensus supports.
That bubble you talked about was something that was inevitable. I mean, that was just bad money chasing stable assets. That's a correction that needed to happen, and we just got to ride it out.
So economics is meant to bring us freedom, and some things we don't have any freedom over, like the amount of tax we pay, which for most of us is probably around about $100 a week. The other thing we don't have much freedom over is the price we pay for somewhere to live. And that price is being manipulated higher and higher because of the inefficiencies of our tax system. So let's sort that out so we can reduce the amount of tax, reduce the price of living, increase our ability to buy organic, to live where we want to live, and make what we want to make.
So we're off on a little bit of a tangent. The question was, what do I think about the economists who are speaking in for the banks? Well, it's really interesting that banks, part of what banks do is provide money for purchasing real estate. And a major part of that purchase price is the cost of land. And as land values go up, when speculation sets in these about 18 to 20 year cycles, near the end of those cycles, the land speculation really gets rampant, as we've seen. The land prices are pushed up so high that it finally busts. Until that happens, the banks are lending money against this increased value. They love it. The more value of land that has to be paid for when people purchase it, the more loans they make, the more money they make. And the fact that banks create money out of thin air and then require it to be paid back with interest is kind of, now talk about a conflict of interest. To talk about the commons, that whole thing, the process of creating money should be a public, that belongs to the public and has been privatized a long time ago. That's kind of another discussion. I think that the banks are, and the whole monetary system is an incredible conflict of interest in relationship to the earth. The bankers are in the business of funding land speculation. If there wasn't a way to borrow money for a new buyer of real estate to buy, then there would be no land speculation. There wouldn't be any turnover of real estate. So I think the bankers, whether they know it or not, I'm sure at the higher levels, they understand the system that is in place, that as a value, that the value of land goes up and the value of stocks go up, whether or not there's an increased productivity of the land or that the stocks are really more valuable, which they are not. The values are driven up merely because there's a bunch of money around that people can borrow, especially at lower interest when interests are low, to invest in things that and it merely drives up the cost of these things without any concomitant accompanying increase of productivity of real value. So what insanity to have to pay more for a piece of land that is no more useful than it ever was. It, you know, land becomes more useful in, as the community improves overall, as there's more people and there's and technology allows more productivity of all kinds. And that's the real value, the real value of land that's related to its productivity.
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.